right, team. We're starting now. Welcome, everyone. Reminder that we've still got our live streaming running. We have about 12 listeners at any one time. We're averaging, I think 12 is... Well, we might have had 14 at one stage yesterday. And that's going across extremely well. Now, we have some announcements to do with tonight's function. The bus for tonight... remember that we're heading off to a special barbecue. Briar. We're heading off to the Briar this evening, which will be held at the bowling club. We don't need to know where that is. All we have to do is get on the bus and they'll take us there. But there are some, you know, careful things for us to think about. Please, can we meet? Our session will finish at 4:30 today. Dress as casual, and you can interpret that however you like. We've been asked to meet here in the tent at 5 o'clock. Suzanne van Veek would like to do a roll call, which may sound awfully formal, but she doesn't want to leave anyone behind. And she's been charged with doing this by Kathy Donaldson, and as some of you may know, Kathy is known as Tiger, so we don't want Kathy to Tiger Suzanne. So please, if we can all be here, please, at 5 p.m. for the bus and for Suzanne's roll call, and she's got to count us all off. We hop on the bus, head off to our braai this evening, and we'll be brought back safely, I believe, by 9:30 this evening.
Phyllis?
Yes. Can I ask, will we be outside for the braai? That will determine my casual dress.
Not sure. The answer to outside, inside?
Inside.
Inside. We will be inside tonight. Because, yes, it is quite cool in the evenings. Thank you, Phyllis. Next thing is just a gentle reminder. Actually, you've all been very good, but I just heard a mobile phone ring. So if we could put them to silent or something during our conference sessions. But thank you for being so good up till now. Photographs. Photographs will be placed on the ICEB2012.net website, and I believe a whole lot of photos are going up tomorrow. So that's photographs. Now, there is a revised print version of the guidelines for small production units. That revised print version is up here. I gather that there's a typo on the front page. I don't know that it's a serious revision. Also, the attendance lists are up here. I told you about my mistake, so that's all right. Now, Wednesday evening. Wednesday evening we have a presidential dinner here. The dinner, it will be a plated dinner. That is, it is not a buffet dinner. So we each need to choose what we want to eat. Now, at some stage today, 62 print menus will be handed out. We will be asked to put our names on a paper and tick as clearly as possible our choices. The key choices relate to the meats. Hotel would like plenty of time to make sure that they prepare enough meat. That's the menu for Wednesday night. And that's all my announcements. So, thank you. Thank you, John. So I now wish to let you know that we're going through a number of reports this morning, so we'll deal with the Treasurer's Report, we'll deal with the Braille Music Report, then the Guidelines for Small Production Units, then the UEB Training and Implementation Materials Committee Report, and I'm going to remind you about the bus for tonight in case somebody is coming in late. And we'll also read the lunch menu. So let's begin with Bill Jolly and the Treasurer's Reports.
Thank you, Mary, and good morning, everyone. I'm going to largely read the first part of the Treasurer's Report, and then I will read some of and speak to the Auditor's Report, which follows. As Treasurer, perhaps I'm there for my numeracy skills more so than my literacy ones, so I'm slightly ashamed to say that I normally spell Johannesburg with a U, but for some reason I spelled it with an E on the front of this document. My apologies for that. I became ICB Treasurer, elected by the 4th General Assembly of ICB, April 2008. I also became Chair of the Budget and Finance Committee, whose other member is Christo de Klerk, appointed by the Executive Meeting which followed the General Assembly. We have not met as a committee during the period under review, although I have consulted with Christo and with the President as necessary. This report covers the transfer of funds and responsibility from the United States to Australia, establishment and operation of the Melbourne account, and details of financial transactions. In April 2009, I established an account with the Bendigo Bank in Melbourne. The bank in Boston, USA, where the ICB account previously resided, was unable to make an international electronic funds transfer. So the transaction was made by cheque. For logistical reasons, including this one, it was decided to make one transfer of the funds rather than several. So it was necessary to wait until a term deposit matured in January 2010 before executing the transfer. Meanwhile, the previous treasurer was unable to arrange for the accounts to be reviewed by a qualified auditor. Accordingly, this report formally covers the account operated from Melbourne during the three calendar years 2009, 2010 and 2011. The previous Treasurer reported to the General Assembly in April 2008 that the accounts were holding just over $35,000, United States dollars, on 31 December 2007 and that all memberships for 2008 had been paid. But I was unable to verify receipt of payments for 2008 from South Africa and the United States. The amount of the membership fee, as many people will know, but not all, is $500 US per country. South Africa made its payment into the Melbourne account in 2009, and the United States advised me that its payment for 2008 had not been made, had not been sent. The United States made a payment to the Melbourne account in 2009 for the years 2008 and 2009, so that's a total of $1,000. But unfortunately, the funds were not received and were unable to be traced, so we have to give that up as lost. So essentially, the funds didn't show in my account, but they showed as having gone out of the United States account, and our contacts with the banks were unsuccessful to retrieve those, to find out what happened. It's just one of those unfortunate things with international transactions and banking that happens. The only payment made from the Boston account in 2008 was $4,433.46 for travel expenses of the President to attend the 4th General Assembly in Melbourne. There were no payments made from the Boston account in 2009, and the amount transferred in 2010 to the Melbourne account was $34,000.86. That's United States dollars. Now I'm going to talk about establishment and operation of the Melbourne account, and I'm going to switch into Australian dollars. And fortunately, for overall purposes, the American dollar and the Australian dollar are pretty much the same these days. It was 102 cents, 1.02 today, the Australian dollar being slightly the stronger. But you can think of them as pretty much the same. But this explains why we don't have lots of round figures in the report that follows. I established an account with the Bendigo Bank in Melbourne in April 2009. The account operates in Australian dollars. It was infeasible to maintain an account in US dollars in Australia. The banks offering this facility were business customer oriented and required a minimum balance of $50,000 to avoid the payment of special fees, and no interest would be paid for accounts holding under $1 million. The account has two signatories, which is Bill Jolly and Mary Schnackenberg as the president. Payments are made subject to the arrangement that the president must give prior approval to any payment made from the account. A payment to the president must first be approved by my colleague, Christo de Klerk, the member of the Finance, Budget and Finance Committee. I established an operating account paying 3% interest with access to a range of fixed term deposits paying around 5 to 6% interest. I have established very cordial relations with the bank and I have found the staff most helpful. However, that the bank statements do not reliably list the source of incoming international transfers has been inconvenient and was a surprise to me when I started. But I have now established a process to identify and record the source of international funds shortly after they are received into the account. Under Australia's taxation laws, the bank must withhold 46% of interest paid unless the account holder has a tax file number. I applied for and the ICEB was granted a tax file number, whereupon the deduction ceased and all deductions have been reimbursed. Now I'm going to talk about details of the financial transactions. There's a table in the report which details the transactions, the ICEB account, for the three calendar years, 2009, 2010 and 2011. All figures are in Australian dollars. The value of the Australian dollar relative to the United States dollar continuously varies, as I've mentioned, whereas the two currencies were at parity at 31 December 2011, so the Braille readers might have to scratch out an extra dot there in 2012, because I can't foresee the currency at the end of this year yet. Sorry for that. The Australian dollar is worth 1.06, was worth 1.06 United States dollars at the date of this report, 19 March 2012. Now, they don't have a table, and I'm not going to read right through the table, but I'll just mention a few things. The membership fees in the 3 years were $4,133, $3,800, and $3,655. Now, the important thing to note is that all memberships are up to date. The interest, as a matter, was in the first year $42, the second year $2,174, and in the third year $3,133. The total income for each of these years was $4,176, $69,063, and in the third year, last year, $6,983. The expenses, the main expense really has been travel reimbursements and expenses associated with the midterm executive meeting. The expense for that was $8,582, and for the Braille 21 Congress, the ICEB provided a sponsorship of €2,000, which is shown here as $2,946. The closing balance then at the beginning of the period, essentially the amount transferred over to the Australian account from the United States was $36,000, and the closing balance at the end of 2011 is 56,000 $209.54. Now, there are some notes which follow, and I'll mention some of those. In the membership fees, the amount in 2011 includes the Nigerian fee for 2012, which has been paid. There was a grant received in 2010 of $25,000 from Royal National Institute of Blind People to cover executive committee meeting costs, including some travel expenses. And I thank RNIB for that support of ICEB. The amount transferred from the ICEB account in Boston was $34,086. The ICEB made travel reimbursements for the President to attend meetings and conferences as approved by the Executive Committee. And these were to attend the launch of the UEB rulebook in Sydney, Australia, in May 2010, and to attend the midterm executive meeting of the ICEB in Birmingham in July 2010, to attend the 5th Africa Forum in Accra in Ghana, that was in July 2011, and to attend the Braille 21 Congress in Leipzig, Germany in September 2011, and as we heard yesterday, the President presented papers at each of those last two congresses or conferences on behalf of ICEB. So at year's end, the account was holding $56,209.54, including $20,000 invested for 2 months through to 29 February at 5.4% per annum, and $30,000 invested for 6 months through to 30 June at 5.5% per annum interest. So that's essentially the report, Madam Chair, and then I have I arranged for the report to be audited, and so for that audit, of course, I provided the auditor with that report, with a log of the transactions from the bank statement, and also the evidence justifying the various payments. So all those receipts that were meticulously documented for me by the President were, in fact, seen by the auditor. The audit was provided by Jan Collier of J.O. Collier and Partners, accountants and auditors, and it is a report to the members of International Council on English Braille. And the audit report begins: we have audited the accompanying financial report, being a general purpose financial report of International Council on English Braille, which comprises a statement of receipts and payments for the years ended 31 December 2009, 2010 and 2011. The auditor's report then talks about the management's responsibility for the financial report. That is, it's the management or the ICEB officer's responsibility to for determining the form of the report and for preparing the report. And then we talk about the auditor's responsibility. And essentially, what the auditor does is to look at the processes and ensure that the funds have been spent as have been said, so that there's been no mismanagement or a misappropriation, and in particular to enable the board, or in a corporate sense the directors, to sign off on the report. The key thing is that the board must be able to state that the organisation can pay its upcoming accounts as and when they fall due. That's essentially what the audit does. And the auditor, in conducting the audit, has confirmed that she is meets the relevant independence requirements. That she doesn't have any formal connection with the organisation, or any connection other than being the auditor. The auditor's opinion is stated: in our opinion, the financial report of International Council on English Braille, A, gives a true and fair view of the financial position of International Council on the English Braille as at 31st December 2011 and of its performance for the three calendar years, 2009, 2010 and 2011. And B, complies with Australian accounting standards to the extent required. And that was signed on the original by Janet Collier, of J.L. Collier and Partners, dated 26th of March 2012. So that's the report up to the end of December. I might just mention that since that time, we've received the membership fees for all ICEB members, and we have provided a, as determined by the executive, a grant of $2,500 each, United States dollars, to each country to support the participation of its delegation at this General Assembly. At this stage, all those payments have been made except for the one for Nigeria. Accounting the one for Nigeria, the audit fee of about $250, the anticipated costs for the President to attend this General Assembly of just under $4,000, and an anticipated contribution for the World Braille usage of $5,000, then I anticipate that with interest of just under $900 coming into the account, that at the end of June, when that term deposit expires of $30,000, we will have just over $34,000 in the account. So, in other words, in the last 4 years, we're almost precisely at the same position financially as we were. The all monies that have come in will have been expended. So that concludes my report, Madam Chair, and I'm happy to take questions on the report.
Any questions for Bill? And thank you very much, Bill. We appear to have no questions. Just one more call? Thank you very much, Bill, for your comprehensive report and for taking us through it with such care. And there's been one person who's had to spend quite a bit of the money. I really want to pay tribute to Bill for a professional, clear support, making sure that I provide him with the information he needs, and also responding in a very fair manner to any questions that I had. So I think I feel very confident that ICEB funds are in very careful hands, and I'm sure that they will continue to remain so in the next 4 years. So thank you very much, Bill. Now, we are about to move on to the Braille Music Report. Well, all right, we can, because it's the Treasurer's report, that's true, it would be better to have a motion. So, Bill, would you like to move the adoption of your report?
Yes, Mary. Mary, I'll move that the report be adopted and the auditor's report be noted.
And so it's moved by Bill Jolly and seconded by Bill Paul. Yes, right. They pay all the bills. Exactly. So, yes, thank you very much. Now, I'll just one last call for any comments on the Treasurer's report. Fine. I'm going to move the resolution. All those in favour say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Right. Thank you very much, Bill. Now, we're going to move on to the Braille Music Report, and we've had advice that, well, first of all, this report is written by Geordie Howell, who's the chair of that committee. Geordie's from Australia. Geordie's not able to be with us this morning, not physically, But we know she's with us in spirit because we've heard that she's listening. So a special hello to you, Geordie. And Geordie's report is being presented by Pete Osborne. So, Pete, over to you.
Okay. We're just playing with microphones. It's a fun game. Hello, Geordie. Okay, and hello, everybody else out there on the net. I'm going to read through the report, and then obviously we can take any questions afterwards. I will also watch online to see if Geordie has any observations that she wants to make. I'll try and pick those up as well, email permitting. The wonders of technology. Okay. Since its invention, literary braille has developed substantially with the introduction of languages other than original French. The scripts, obviously, as we know, include Cyrillic, Japanese, Tenji. Multiple codes to represent mathematics have been created to meet the needs of blind people all over the world, using just six dots in a domino formation, which are used to represent all forms of material as we know. It's interesting. As an aside, I often reflect on this, and it never does cease to amaze me just how amazing Braille is in that respect, how versatile it has become in terms of representing the various aspects of information that we all love and need. The International Council on English Braille recognised that Braille music was in a unique category when it took the decision to establish the music committee chaired by me, Pete Osborne. The aim of the committee was to bring together some of the initiatives carried out in various countries, as well as to isolate and work to resolve the ambiguities between music and the Unified English Braille. In May 2011, I, as in Geordie Howe, was appointed as... It gets quite confusing who I is in this context when you're reading someone else's report, so I do apologise if I get this wrong. Geordie Howe was appointed chair of the ICB and Music Committee. Pete Osborne, as in me, and I, as in Geordie Howe, this is going like a comedy sketch, isn't it? Met in Australia last year to discuss the direction the new committee should take. Areas highlighted included ambiguities between Unified English Braille and Braille Music Code, and consideration regarding electronic production of scores. Geordie learnt that the previous committee conducted its work through teleconferences and email. However, email has proved to be more effective due to the different time zones, etc. I agreed to remain on the committee, and Geordie very kindly thanks me for my support, which she's most welcome to. And I'm pleased to be a member of the committee. It's been a very, very interesting discussion. The committee structure. The music committee consists of members from all member countries of ICB who work with Braille music as music educators, librarians, transcribers, proofreaders, chairs of other Braille music committees, singers and instrumentalists. I often think it'd be fun to get together and have some kind of gig or concert with all of the members of the music committee. That would be terrific. We should arrange that for a future event, Geordie, I think. I think you could mastermind that quite effectively. The members of the committee are listed in the report here. We also have a number of observers who are either experts in Braille music or have a strong interest in the area. Observers are welcome to contribute, but they don't vote, basically. And the observers that we're aware of at the moment are listed in that committee, listed in the report. And I would like to thank everybody for their participation. I'd like to join Geordie in doing that. We've had some really interesting discussions about some quite complex issues, and as you can see from this report, you know, there's still a lot of work for that committee to do. So, work to date. After an initial introduction, Geordie posed a list of areas for focus for the committee for consideration, and the committee should provide feedback on these. These included UEB and Braille Music. Where are the ambiguities, and how should we treat them? How should we try to resolve them? Electronic resources and catalogues. How many exist? And where are they? And, you know, how can we deal with all of these copyright restrictions around such resources? A nice little issue for us to chew over. Technical issues around transcribing with Braille Music software, with music software. The development of music software, particularly over the last, I would say, 5 years, has been quite phenomenal, and it does afford some opportunity for the transcription of scores more effectively, but it also poses quite a lot of challenge. The primary focus for us this year has been the clarification of ambiguities between music and Unified English Braille. In the last month, the ICEB Code Maintenance Committee, in consultation with the Music Committee, has revised the code switching rule for music, directing transcribers to the new International Manual of Braille Music Notation, 1996, and deferring to the rules of the International Braille Music Code, rather than providing alternative rules which may cause confusion. Thus, the code switch from UEB into music uses the Braille music sign .6.3. The switch returning from music to UEB remains the music sign .56.23. This is not treated as a non-UEB indicator, as the switch occurs from within the music code back into UEB. I do hope that makes sense to you. I think it does to me. Ambiguities still to be worked on include accents when transcribing a language other than English. This is particularly relevant for vocal score, and as a occasional singer who struggles sometimes to access score at very, very short notice, and you have to read very, very quickly. Space really is a premium issue for people like myself. I know Geordie's in this position as well. It's been found by Braille music users in Australia that when reading vocal music, the UEB accent proved challenging. And Bill Poole had a little chuckle to my right then. So you might have an observation on that in a second. The accent consists of a two-cell sign, and therefore it's cumbersome to skim over quickly, especially when space is paramount, for example, in a line of vocal music, which is already in uncontracted Braille, in the case of a language other than English. One solution that's been suggested is to deviate from UEB and use the Braille signs for accents of the country from which the music is being transcribed. I can see that might also have some issues. Making sure to include an explanatory page in the front of a given score defining the accents that will be used. This discussion is still underway. I'm not surprised. It's quite a challenging one, that, I think. But it is a real issue for those of us who actually use, you know, vocal score. Space, actually getting the text in to a score that you need. Every cell can often be, often count, can often be an issue. Brackets within music scores. In countries where UEB is the official code for transcribing English Braille, there are discrepancies in the way brackets are brailled in music scores. It's been argued that UEB brackets should be used, and gives the example in the of the dots here, which I won't read everything out. A vocal score must fit as much text on one line to be of best use to everybody. So this can be quite challenging to get everything in. And therefore, economising the space is essential. And the brackets dots 2, 3, 5, 6 can be more compact in this sense. Again, discussion of this point is still very much ongoing, and we need to try and resolve that so that we get consistency. Future projects. With the emphasis on copyright across borders and the work on the United Nations Treaty, this is the copyright treaty that's being discussed, my aim is in turn to make this a focus for our committee by creating a list of online catalogues and resources that in the future we may begin to exchange materials, just let the tractor go by, and lessen duplication. Music is the only international Braille code that spans languages, and Geordie would therefore like to facilitate discussions regarding future possibilities for material exchange, despite the language spoken. RNIB is investigating a call to action to preserve hard copy materials and set up an international fund to digitise such resources. This is something our chair, Kevin Carey, who is also musically inclined, is quite often a singer and joins choirs and stuff. He's very keen on establishing some form of foundation that could support this kind of effort. I am also very concerned that our archives are full of hard copy scores, which will just disappear if we don't do something about them. They will very sadly turn to dust, or whatever they might, or whatever zinc or whatever we've got might turn to. The ICEB Music Committee would be an appropriate vehicle to promote this sort of work, and I think it would be a useful vehicle to bring about cooperation that might enable us to achieve this objective. The committee's perhaps most important role is to promote the teaching and production of Braille music internationally and maintain links with organisations to collaborate on projects of international significance to carry out this vital work. And the committee's given some thought to some text for some resolutions, which is good to see. It proposes some points that we might include in a resolution here, and I'll just cover those briefly now. The points are to create a call to action concerning the need to preserve the heritage of Braille music, only available in hard copy master format. The next point is to promote the importance of technology in the production and distribution of Braille music. The committee would also like to see us playing an active part in the continued development of the International Braille Music Code. And finally, promote the teaching and learning of Braille music. And that concludes the report from the Music Committee.
Thank you very much, Pete. Any questions on the report? Any comments on the Music Committee report?
Thank you, Bill Poole, United Kingdom. Yes, Peter's right. I did sort of make under the breath comments on some of the things he was saying. I mean, I am aware of the problems. I can read Braille music. People tried to teach me to play things, and I was a very poor executant, but that was due to manual lack of dexterity, not due to inability to master the code. I'm happy to have a look at this in the light of the UEB situation to see what comments I could make that are worthwhile. I have a music advisor who will ensure that I don't talk nonsense. The problem is that I do think there would be difficulties about using lower G brackets, but you know, let's just look at the situation and see. And I think I wasn't properly seized of the need to conserve every possible cell to make things compact, which is surprising, really, because I'm normally a person who looks for ways of saving space. In fact, I've been accused of doing that to a fault. But never mind. But I mean, I'm willing to talk to Pete off the table about this and see if we can make any progress. But he's got all the music expertise he needs, so I'm only providing linguistic expertise. Okay.
Thank you, Bill. You could indeed go on the, as an observer, on the music committee and comment directly to Geordie. The issue about space saving is very pertinent for singers and makes sense even to me as someone who once sang in a choir 18 years ago. So I do appreciate what Geordie is saying, and I suggest you perhaps consider going on the ICB Music Committee as an observer. Any other comments? Any other comments about the music report? No, we appear to have no. We do have a comment from Canada about the music report.
Darlene Bogart, Canada. When we're talking about the uncontracted braille in the case of a language other than English, wouldn't it be just quite acceptable to use the accented letter symbols from that country? I think that's what UEB says, that we only use the UEB accented letters symbols when we're having short little phrases in an English context. So if all the words are in French, for example, I can't see why they wouldn't be, you wouldn't be perfectly right in using the French accented letters.
I shouldn't really comment, but as a librarian who's borrowed music for students from all around the world, I think it's really important for serious music students to know about the accents in other languages. Anyway, we need to move on from there. But thank you for clarifying the rule according to your understanding, Darlene. Thank you for that. And I have no doubt that the Braille Music Committee will continue its conversation and also its conversation with Phyllis, because there may be some impacts and some supports that Phyllis can give in respect to links between the Code Maintenance Committee and the Braille Music Committee. And my understanding is that they are in close contact about a number of issues. Okay, I think we've got another. And Pete would like the call. Yes.
Thank you. Just a slightly different issue. I'm very aware that the Braille Authority of North America's Music Committee is doing some exceptionally good work to work through the current international manual with a view to proposing some revisions. And I think one thing we need to look at is how we continue to internationalise that work. The committee has observers from a number of countries, including the UK, and certainly from the work I've seen that's going on, the work is exceptionally detailed and very well considered. And I think we need to create a stronger link, if we can, between that work and the work of the ICEB Music Committee.
That would be excellent, Pete. Any further comments before we move on to the next report? Okay. Fine. Thank you very much. Thank you to Geordie, who has picked up the committee, and also to Pete. Of course, the executive, the ICEB executive, continues to monitor the activities of different committees. So even if we may not make a particular decision or respond to a particular problem at this General Assembly, the problem doesn't go away, and the executive will continue to support and assist as ever it's been doing up until now. So these things don't get lost sight of. So thank you very much to both Geordie and to Pete. And I'd like now to move on to Jean Obi. Now, Jean, you've got two reports to deal with, guidelines for small Braille production units, and then following that you'll be talking about UEB Training and Implementation Materials Committee. And it's now 11:15, and I'd like us to just pause at about 5 to 12 because I'll have a few more announcements and then we'll be able to take lunch. So, Jean, can I hand the floor to you, please?
Thank you. The guidelines for small braille production units was brought up because it's difficult for developing countries and small resource facilities that probably don't have internet access to go onto other countries' websites to access information on formatting and producing braille generally. And even within Nigeria, I get quite a few requests from maybe resource centres with ministries of education, things like that, on what they need to set up a brailing facility. So this really is an answer to that, which I realise would not be very relevant for the most part for developed countries that have well-established braille authorities, well-established institutes of the blind, etc. And their things are fully up. But I'm therefore looking to these developed facilities for help in fine-tuning this. And I ask you also to recognize that I have only got experience with the things I'm actually using, and there are many things beyond my circle of use that most of you will have, or one or other of you will have some access to. So I need your assistance in adding and subtracting to this. So I would ask you to go through it carefully, and any points that you have, if you could let me have them so that I can fine-tune it. First thing is setting up. When a ministry is setting up, they have not started, so we have to look at what is required for setting up a small production unit. I don't intend to read through the whole thing, right? The emphasis on computer skills. A lot of centres get the people first and then discover that they really don't have the computer skills to run it. So that's a bit upside down. So 1.1 is extremely important, right, that the people operating it do have a good basic knowledge of computer skills. 1.2, the equipment. Equipment is a problem because we don't have the same access to small facilities don't have the same access to power and paper, maintenance, all these things, right? So we have to make the equipment simple and easy to handle. From my own experience, the most useful braille embosser is the one that uses sheet paper, because that one you can get paper in the local market and cut it to size, whereas the tractor paper, continuous paper that is used, it is available in places like Nigeria because they use it for printing share certificates and things like that, but it's very expensive and beyond the reach of use for braille books. We have gone further than just using sheet paper. We set up our centre, the Niger Wife Centre, in 1995, and since then we have continually used recycled paper. Now, by recycled paper, we mean posters on right quality of paper. And reports, company reports, quality magazines, all these sort of things. The most recent one we found is the GSM posters that they stick up all over the place, and they change them frequently. So this is a possible source of our paper. And this applies not just to producing with an heme, but we also, what if we get a paper that doesn't quite fit the size or the oddments, we send out to schools all over the country for their children to use as notes for their notes and assignments and things like that. And it's particularly good if it has one side that is white and the other side printed, because then if it's a sighted teacher, you can do it on the so that the braille comes on the white side and is easier to read for a sighted teacher to read. So when buying equipment, we recommend the Index Everest. That's the only one I know that is a sheet feed. Now, if you know of any other braille producer sheet feed, then it would be good to know about it and look into it. And the other things that we put there are quite basic things. With the equipment, it's very necessary to take into consideration the maintenance of the equipment. When we first started, we had quite some problem with maintenance. And then some years back, we discovered that Index has a short course, a maintenance course they have from time to time. And we were able to raise money to send our person who looks after the equipment to that course. And it has paid dividends 100 times, because we hardly have anything that he cannot solve now. And if there's a problem that he sticks on, then gets on the phone and they solve it, and we get the spare parts as we need them. So that maintenance, sending somebody on a maintenance on the maintenance program